I shall never forget those terrible days of the Great Advance. It was my first real glimpse of warfare, and it will remain impressed in my mind as long as memory lasts. These were the words written by an anonymous soldier who was part of Mob's Own, the D Company of the 7th Battalion of the Northamptonshire Regiment that had been recruited by the famous Northampton Saints and England rugby player Edgar Mobbs. We'll be doing a separate podcast all about Edgar because he's worth a podcast all on his own, but it's worth considering the continued words of this anonymous soldier who's describing what happened to Mob's Own during the Battle of Loos in front and in the Hohenzollern redoubt. He goes on, "We marched for 2 days to our position, spending the night in the open, and on Saturday night we took over the trenches. All the time a terrible cannonade was going on, deafening by day but 10 times more terrible by night. When the vivid flashes in the sky, like sustained summer lightning, the lingering lights of the star shells as they burst, and the roar of the artillery seemed almost to herald the end of time and the approach of eternity. Sunday came and the light of the day brought relief to our tense nerves, and we were glad to get the order to move, no matter the consequences, after the nerve-wracking noises of the night before. When the order came along, we sprang from our trenches and dashed, yelling as we went, towards the Germans. It seemed as if 10,000 furies had been suddenly let loose. How we reached the Germans' trenches, I cannot recall. All I remember is hand-to-hand work with the bayonet until we secured the trench and dropped down on the soft bodies of the German dead. When I had time to collect my wits, I looked around eagerly at my comrades. There seemed few missing faces, and I think we'd escaped lightly. We held on to our position with hardly a bite or a drink. But no food could reach us for some time, but it got too hot and we were driven out. But back we came again, and we won it again with a bayonet. Again a horrible night of vivid nightmares, with the dead and dying all around. The worst of Monday was worse than what had gone before. We held a trench in a dangerously exposed position, and before it was light, shells fell thick and fast. It looked as if nothing could live in it, yet we hung on, and with the trenches blown in places and badly damaged all along, the Prussian Guard came to the attack. They seemed to have pushed across on either side and came at us from both ends. One machine gun was put out of action, and we had to retire. Just a handful failed to get away with us, and we gave them up for lost. They were cut off, but they held out for some time and eventually got away. The enemy were apparently under the impression that the trenches were better manned. Just afterwards, I felt that all the mules in creation had kicked me. At least that's what it felt like when I got hit. Thus ended my experience of actual warfare. And the reason that I've quoted those words about the action of D Company, Mob's Own, the 7th Northants, in September 1915 during the Battle of Loos is because this podcast is all about one particular soldier that was there that day. One soldier from Mob's Own that was wounded on that day that we've just described in that anonymous letter. And his name was Charlie Dunkley. And he died many years ago in 1970. He lived a full life. He was wounded 2 more times. And was actually sunk on a troop ship somewhere in the ocean. But he survived all this, and he went on and got married and had a daughter called Molly. And Molly is now 94 years old. She's still with us, and I went to see Molly in the house that she was born in the home that she lived in with her parents, Charlie and his wife. And although she's 94, she's got a crystal clear memory. And she was able to tell us what it was like, what her dad was like, what he was like after the war, what he told her, the little that he told her about his time on the Western Front. It really was an incredible experience spending the afternoon with Molly. After the interview, we continued our chat, and Molly had spent the morning making homemade scones and cake, which I thoroughly enjoyed. But during this interview, which I hope you'll enjoy, she talks about her dad being wounded, how going overseas during the First World War meant that they couldn't go to the seaside when she was a child. She never saw the seaside. She goes on to talk about her dad fire watching in World War II and what happened when a bomb hit their village in Northamptonshire. So let's go on now and listen to what Molly told me when we met a couple of weeks ago at her home in a village called Paulersbury, which is near Toaster in Northamptonshire. So I'm in a village called Paulersbury, which is near Toaster in Northamptonshire. And I'm with a lady called Molly, whose father was one of the Edgar Mobbs own, who joined up with D Company of the 7th Battalion of the Northamptonshire Regiment in September of 1914. And by way of summary about her dad was Private Charles Charlie Dunkley, regimental number 15176. And what we know is that Charlie was from here, from Paulersbury, and he was a farm labourer. He joined up with his mates from the village. Now, he wasn't, like so many other of the mob zone, he wasn't a Saints fan, he wasn't a rugby fan, he was in fact a football fan and a football player. And what we have here is one of his shirts when he played for the Cobblers. We've spoken to Molly a number of times about her father and we've recorded her memories. But what we wanted to do today was go a little bit further than that and look at the social history, how the war affected Molly and her family. Charlie transferred from the Northamptonshire Regiment into the North Staffs, and he ended up in the Hampshire Regiment. Now, we know he fought with the 7th Battalion of the North Ants at the Battle of Loos in September of 1915, and he was wounded in the head and taken to hospital to Dublin, where he recovered and then returned to the army. In September 1916, he's wounded again, this time on the Somme, and he's taken to hospital in Cardiff. Once again, he returns to action. Molly thinks that he was torpedoed. The boat he was on was torpedoed and he'd been working with the Arabs. At the end of the war, he was demobbed and he returned here to Paulersby and he started to work for the county council. He was a keen gardener, had an allotment and the produce he shared with other people in the village. And just before I came to see Molly today, I went to the church just a few metres from her home, and I went to see Charlie's grave. So he died in 1970 and he's buried there with his wife. So Molly, what I've got here to start with is a copy of the census from 1911. I don't know whether you've seen this before.
Showing the whole family history.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So there at the top, I think that says Harry Dunkley, does it?
That's Grandpa.
Lizzie Dunkley.
That's his wife.
Yeah, so they're your grandparents, aren't they?
Yeah.
And in 1911, Harry's 42 and Lizzie's 38. And look who's underneath there. We've got Charlie Dunkley,
that's right,
aged 16, yeah, working as a farm labourer.
That's right. He was the eldest of the children.
Yes, because beneath him, we've got Herbert,
yeah,
Dunkley, who was 13. We've got George, Arthur, and then there's two daughters, May and Eleanor. Does that say Eleanor?
Yes, Eleanor, known as Nell.
Right, okay. So that's in 1911, and we can see that your dad is 16 years old in 1911.
That's right, he was born in 1895.
1895, which is a year when so many of the soldiers that went off to the war were, yes, born in that
year.
Well,
they were all similar age, weren't they?
And so 1914 comes along and war is declared on August the 4th. And we think that Charlie joined up with Edgar Mobbs, the famous Edgar Mobbs, because he was a sportsman, perhaps, because he played football. And you said he joined up with his mates from the village.
Yes. They said they were all going off to war. And I'm sure Dad wouldn't be outdone. So he went off and joined them.
And he was probably, as a farm labourer, working as a farm labourer, that would have been hard work,
yes,
in the fields around here. And I suppose going off to join the army, it was going to be, maybe he thought, like they did, it was going to be over by Christmas.
I think he thought, well, life of adventure, see the world.
Three meals a day, going off with his mates.
Yeah.
Do you know? I don't suppose you know who his mates were, do you? He didn't talk about the names.
No, some of whom are on the War Memorial. Because they didn't return.
No.
Not many of them did return.
I could see from just a small village, there must be 20 or 30 names.
Yes.
On the War Memorial. Yeah. You can almost see that from your front room, can't you?
You see, and the majority of them were working on farms.
Yes, yeah, that's the main employment.
Because it was the main employment around here. There was a factory in Toaster, but nearly all the lads were working on the farm.
Mm. And he was actually born in Paulusbury then?
He was born in Paulusbury. He was born in a house at the bottom of a lane which was called Pudding Bag.
Oh, right. Yeah. Is it still there?
Yeah.
Right.
Only because you couldn't get out of it. It was a bag.
Right.
And I think they should have retained that title.
Yeah, that's right.
It's now Plum Park Lane.
Oh, they have changed the name of it now. But it's still the original name to you, isn't it? Because that's where your dad was born. Now, I'm talking to you, Molly, and I hope you don't mind me asking what year you were born.
A long while ago, in 1928.
And this is the reason why we wanted to come and talk to you, because there is no way that we can talk to Charlie or his mates. There is no way that we can talk to any of the veterans from the Great War anymore because they've all left us. The last one died about 12 years ago, Harry Patch. And their children have also nearly all gone now. There's not many of the children that could remember the veterans from the Great War that we can come and talk to like this. No. And this is why we wanted to come and talk to you, because you can actually remember your dad and remember a little bit about him and what he did in the war.
Yeah.
I know you said, like most veterans, he didn't want to talk about it. But he at Christmas he did, I understand.
Well, when he sat warm and contented and got the Christmas spirit in him, he would just say a bit. But he would never talk about it so that I could hear.
Right. Who was he talking to?
My other grandfather.
Oh, really?
My mother's father.
And did he serve in the war as well?
No.
No, he didn't. Right.
No. He was a carriage maker in Wolverton Works.
Right. Oh, so
he worked on the Queen's train.
Right.
But he used to come at Christmas and stay overnight.
Yeah. This wasn't here where we are now.
Yes.
In this house.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realise that. So this is your childhood home where we're sitting.
Yes, we moved here when I was 10.
Oh, really?
Mm.
So Charlie, actually, this was his home. This is where he used to sit in this
room.
This
is where he was.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
Right next door to the pub.
Yes. Yeah. Which in those days was a lot noisier than it is now.
Right. What, rowdy villagers going in there after a hard week on the farms and then letting off steam at the end of the week.
Yes, I mean, weekends they'd stand outside and sing. And whenever I hear Christmas carols starting, I can hear the voices.
You can remember them.
Yeah.
And people that you knew. You must have known all these people.
Yeah.
You didn't.
The beer was flowing freely those days. Not the price it is today.
No.
So, and as you say, they'd all worked so hard that they had their beer and were happy.
Yeah. And what about during the war years, I suppose? Was it quieter in the Second World War?
Well, it was in a way, although we used to get lots of airmen who were stationed what is now Silverstone Circuit.
Oh, right, yes, because we're only a few miles from the Formula One track at Silverstone, aren't we?
And they would come away out to the nearby villages for a social evening.
And were they British airmen or were they Americans and Canadians?
Yeah, they were mainly English at Silverstone.
Right.
didn't have many Americans. They were mainly English.
So come the start of the Second World War, if you were born in 1928, Second World War starts in 1939. And I understand that war was declared by Neville Chamberlain on a very special day in your life.
Yes.
Would you like to explain why it was so special?
Well, September the 3rd, 1939, was also my 11th birthday.
Yeah.
And my mother was looking forward to preparing a special Sunday lunch. But she said, now, before we start preparing it, I want to listen to the radio.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was me slicing run of beans, ready for lunch. And there was Mr. Chamberlain.
On the radio.
On the radio, declaring that war was on.
So that was out there in the kitchen.
Out there in the kitchen
with your mum. And where was your dad? Where was Charlie when this was going on?
Charlie was on his allotment.
Was he?
Yes.
On his allotment.
Where he loved to be.
And I think that is, I mean, my granddad served all 4 years in the Royal Garrison Artillery, and my memories of him was of tending his garden all of the time.
Yes.
Beautiful roses. And I think this is quite common for many of the veterans that survived. They came home, found a little peaceful corner, and they stayed in that little peaceful corner, didn't they, as much as they possibly could. But I wonder what your dad thought when he came home then for his Sunday lunch and heard that...
Well, poor man didn't have time to think much because a lorry pulled up to collect him about 1 o'clock.
Yeah. On the Sunday.
He got to go on the fire watching duty.
And he'd not had his lunch.
And he hadn't had his lunch. None of us had. We had our lunch about 3 o'clock.
When he came back.
Yes.
Because I've got here a copy. There wasn't a census in 1939. There was what's called a register, where the government went round and recorded where everybody was living in 1939, just before the outbreak of war. And I've got here the register showing this address. Your name has been crossed off because you're still alive. It's not allowed to be shown on this report.
Oh, I see.
That proves that you're still alive. But it shows here your dad with a birthday. It says the 28th of July, 1895. Is that correct?
28th of February.
Oh, it was February. Yes, February. It's my reading it. And then we've got, is it Mary then? Mary, and she was born on the 23rd of April, does it say?
Yes.
1902.
Yes.
1902, and unpaid domestic duties. It says that was what your mum was doing. In other words, she was looking after you and your dad and this little cottage that you're in. And it says that your dad was involved in heavy work at that stage in 1939, and that he was an ARP, which you just alluded to.
Yes, the fire watching side of it.
So in 1939, there wasn't much to do in terms of air raids, but there certainly was in 1940 and 1941. Did he actually go off fire watching then on top of a building somewhere?
Yes.
Where did he go?
He went to Toaster.
He went to Toaster, did he?
Yes. What is now a housing complex, it was then an old workhouse.
Right.
And he used to go there most nights. And in fact, he was there the night we had the landmine drop in the village.
Oh, tell me about that. In this village?
Yeah, about 10 o'clock one night, I'd gone to bed. Suddenly, my mother rushed upstairs, dragged me out of bed half asleep and said, come on, we've got to go down into the pub cellar because there's a landmine.
So the pub next door?
Yeah. Yes, the landlady wasn't really very capable of walking about much. So she used to say to the neighbours, come on, and come and sit down in the pub cellar.
Right.
So that's what we all used to do.
Okay. So what happened then? You went into the pub. Did you know the landmine was coming then, or had it already landed?
No. We just knew because we'd heard the German planes go over.
Really?
Because there was a definite difference
in their sound.
Did you know that, Terry? I can remember sort of, oh, it's one of ours.
I've heard people say that.
Yeah.
But of course,
it used to be.
Not being alive, hearing this.
No.
And the soldiers on the Western Front in the First World War, they knew the difference between different types of shells that were coming out and how dangerous they were and whether or not they were close. Mm. So what you've done as young girls is develop the same skills that the soldiers
are using. German sort of judged them.
Yeah. I can remember my mother sort of, it's all right, it's one of ours, or no, we had it.
We ought to introduce you, actually, because you've just come in as we were recording. As you've just spoken, you'll have to say your name for the tape here.
Marina Beardall.
And you were here in the Second World War.
West Midlands.
In the West Midlands in the Second World War, living with your family. So you've got memories as well. And that's what we wanted to do, is to capture these memories. So you knew there was a German plane. And your dad at this stage is on a roof of what
he
was the
workhouse.
He was
on the roof in Toaster.
In Toaster, yeah.
Yes. But before we could get from here to the cellar of the pub, there was a terrific bang and all went deadly quiet. I can visualise it now. And my mother went stone cold. I can see her standing there. And then suddenly you could hear pigs screaming.
Pigs.
They broke the silence because there were pigs on the farm where the landmine landed.
Dropped. And this was at night time?
This was 10 o'clock at night.
10 o'clock at night.
And then nothing happened, no more. The night went quiet until people started walking about, wondering where the bang had come from. And then we learned that it had landed in Perry End.
Yeah.
But the only person who suffered any injury at all was the farmer, who was outside with a lantern.
Right.
So I suppose whoever was dropping the bombs...
Saw the light. And what happened to the farmer? He was killed?
No.
He was just wounded?
He recovered. And today you'd never know there was anything happened.
No. Oh, that was a narrow escape then, really, wasn't it?
But it was so frightening.
I bet it was. I bet also, if you don't know where your dad is at this stage, do you?
Yeah.
You don't know whether he'd been harmed, I suppose. And again, I wonder what he was thinking when this was happening. Having been through the Battle of Loos, where he's been wounded again at the Battle of the Somme in 1916, and now he's seen these missiles coming through the sky towards his home, where his family are living.
He coped with it really well.
Did he?
Because my mother was afraid of some reaction.
Yes.
But no, he coped with that. And he said, well, when he got home, thankfully, we're all right.
It's quite stoical then, wasn't it?
And life must go on. So let's get buckled down and get on with things.
So he didn't show, even before the war, as far as you can remember, he didn't show any signs of shell shock or anything like that.
None at all.
Well, that's really good to hear, isn't it? Because so many of these men...
It was scary.
Mm.
Yeah.
And did he ever talk about Edgar Mobbs and the Mobbs?
No, not much.
No.
Not to me, anyway. He might have done when he went off with his footballing pals on a Saturday.
Yeah.
but...
not to his family.
He probably didn't think I'd be interested.
No, that's right. It's only when you get older, isn't it, that you start to think. And did you think about it then, as a youngster, as a teenage girl growing up, did you think, oh, my dad was in the Great War, and did you ever think to ask him? I suppose you were just getting on with your life, were you?
No, not a lot. I was busy with my schoolwork and...
You were the only child, you mentioned to me. You haven't got any brothers and sisters.
And my tennis, I played all through each summer.
Yeah. So it sounded like a good life here in the village.
It didn't enter into it very much. No.
And then the Second World War came to an end.
In 1945.
1945, by which time you were 17, are you? 17, something like that. 17. And what was it like then after the Second World War here in Paulusbury? Still rationing, but...
Things were a bit dull for a little while. I think everyone was getting accustomed to being able to move freely and safely.
Mm.
And then gradually things got fairly normal. And we could all go on the bus to Northampton.
Was that the big day out, was it, going to Northampton?
Oh, yeah.
And what was Northampton like then?
Oh, a very busy, lovely town.
What was the main attraction in Northampton for you?
The shops, suppose.
Right.
Because none round here.
No. Cinema and things like that? Did you go to the cinema in Northampton?
Yes, not very often.
No.
No, not very often. We did go to the old Exchange cinema once, but the lift got stuck.
Oh, really?
So that put us off for every day.
Where was that? Whereabouts was that then?
On the Market Square.
Oh, right. Yeah,
right at the top.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, just along from where Boots is.
Yes, yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. The drapery end of it. Yeah.
That was a nice cinema. Then there was the Savoy in Abingdon Street.
Yeah. And what about the Northampton Theatre? Did you ever go to that in Abingdon Street?
Oh, yes. Went to the New Theatre.
The New Theatre, that was it. Yeah. I've seen lots of photos of that. And I've
that
seen a wonderful photograph of Lauren Hardy at the stage door appearing there in the 1950s.
It was a lovely theatre.
And a lot of the veterans from the First World War and the Second World War, when they were wounded and being treated in the hospitals around Northampton, they went there for their relaxation, didn't they?
Mm.
It's Primark now, I think, isn't it, or something like that?
Yeah.
No, it's Salvation Army now. It's a Primark's moved, isn't it? It's a Salvation Army.
Oh, yes, my father was a great supporter of the Salvation Army.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he did say... several times, because they used to come round every Lent.
Yeah.
And they liked a donation. And he said to my mother, I don't want you to give money away, but when the Salvation Army come, please give them a donation.
Oh, wow.
Because they were so good to the soldiers.
Ah, I was going to say to you, what
was
that?
Wherever the soldiers were, the Salvation Army would help them.
And did he mean on the Western Front, when he was out in France?
Mm.
Could I just say, that's intriguing me, because my father was in the regular army.
Yes.
And he had a great admiration for the Salvation Army. And when I see them, you know, out wherever, and I think... I wonder why, you know, but I suppose that's it. They did a lot.
I can add a little bit to that. I'm not sure your dad would have ever been to Ypres. I don't think he served at Ypres, or Wipers, as the soldiers call it, in Belgium. Because we know he served at Loos, and we know he served on the Somme, but I'm not sure his battalion was ever at Ypres. But when the soldiers came out of Ypres and headed to the front, there was a junction. And that junction's still there, but it's a modern roundabout now. And on the trench maps, it's called Salvation Corner. And the reason it's called Salvation Corner is because the Salvation Army had a little tea hut there. And as the soldiers were coming up to the front, to the north of Ypres, they were serving them tea.
Yes.
Which, it just clarifies what you were saying about your dad.
Yeah.
So the Salvation Army, as we know, comes from the church.
Mm.
But whether or not soldiers were religious... they'd all seem to have a soft spot for the Salvation Army. And you mentioned about going to church, and your mum and dad are both buried in the church, and I went to see their graves just now. Your dad had a strong faith, did he? A strong religious faith?
Yes.
And he kept that faith, did he? Wasn't affected by the war.
In fact, on the church wall, which he showed me many times, the lads, the farm labourers, as they were before they went to war, used to go to church on a Sunday evening. Some of them would fall asleep. And having Brill Cream their hair, they leaned on the wall.
You're not going to tell me they're still there. The marks are still there. That is incredible. Some of these lads will now be on the memorial outside the church.
Yes.
And yet their Brill Cream is still on where they've fallen asleep at Evensong. This is the sort of reason why
I'll look and see if they've lime washed them over, but I don't think they have.
That really is incredible. So Remembrance Sunday comes round. How did he treat Remembrance Sunday on the 11th of November?
Great respect.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
What would he actually do?
He used to go to a service in Toaster in the
morning. Oh, not here at the church then, not here. He'd go to Toaster in the morning.
And then up here in the afternoon.
Oh, I see, right.
Yeah.
And presumably the war memorial outside the church that's there now would have been there then from probably the mid-1920s.
It was put up soon after the First World War.
So some of his mates will be on, like you said earlier, be on that memorial. And then he would have gone to Toaster, come back to the village here.
He was a great Legion supporter.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I wonder what his thoughts
were. In fact, a few years ago, I was given a remembrance medal because I collected for many, many years on poppy time.
For the British Legion?
British Legion.
Huh. And you were doing that thinking of your dad, no doubt?
Yes.
Huh. That is amazing, isn't it? Gosh. And what about in later life, when he was coming towards the end of his life, did he think any more about it? He didn't mention any more about it then?
No. In later life, his garden and his allotment was all he really cared about.
Yeah.
Plus going to the cobblers when they were at home.
Right, yeah. So he played for the cobblers for a little bit, we know, and then he went to watch them at the old county ground.
Yeah.
Which I say is, that's how, for people that don't know, the mob zone that Edgar Mobbs recruited.
And when he came back home off the bus after, if the cobblers had won, we'd get sweets.
Oh, really? What happens if they lost then?
We wouldn't get anything. We knew it instantly whether they'd won or lost.
Yeah, you did. I suppose you couldn't listen to it on the radio or anything like that. You wouldn't know until we got
home. And then one occasion, my mother had a spell of going on a diet. And I'll always remember this. He bought a bunch of watercress instead of sweets. That didn't go down very well at all.
Did she come off the diet then as a result? Forget that, I want some sweets.
He said, well, I can't grow watercress and you're not eating sweets. So I thought it was the best thing to bring you.
I just think it's incredible sitting here talking about Charlie, a typical volunteer, a typical farm labourer, a typical working class man from that period in time. And he's gone off to the Western Front, and on his first day in battle almost at Loos, he's been injured in the head, wounded in the head. He's then gone back, and we know that he's taken part in the Battle of the Somme, where he's been wounded again. He then mentioned he'd been torpedoed on a ship going off somewhere. It's not surprising that he hasn't talked about it, but I think to live his life as happily as he did is a remarkable achievement with his close-knit family living in this cottage.
I think the spending so many hours in the water, I think that affected him more than some of his injuries.
So he's been wounded twice on the battlefields, the story then of him being torpedoed, how did that come about?
Well, I only know that it happened.
Yeah.
But he would never, ever go to the seaside.
So the ship is probably on a troop ship off somewhere. It's been torpedoed maybe by a U-boat. The ship has sunk and he's ended up in the water. What's happened?
So I don't know, and I don't know how he was rescued.
But you know he was in the water for quite a long time.
Yes.
Right.
He was in the water several hours.
And that's what he told you?
Yeah.
Right. And then
because I remember asking him why we couldn't go to the seaside. Because in those days they used to have coaches go off about 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I remember doing it myself.
To Skeggy or somewhere like that.
Yeah, that's the closest point to us. Yeah.
And,
so he, not only did he not want to go in the water, he didn't want to go to the seaside.
No.
So he didn't want to see the water.
No, he didn't want to see the sea at all.
Right.
He was absolutely certain on that.
And again, he has been very fortunate because if he's been in the water for more than a few minutes, he could have got hypothermia, couldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So he must have been wearing a life jacket of some kind. And he must have been quite a strong man to be able to survive in the water for all that time.
Yeah. He was strong, but I know when I first got a car, my mother had a cousin in East Grinstead.
Yeah.
And she wanted to see them. So, of course, I said, I'll drive.
Yeah.
I'll drive.
Down the M1.
We'll go.
No M1 then, was there?
No
M1. No M1.
Certainly not M25.
So we went off, and on the way, when we neared Brighton, I said, to Mum, there's Shoreham. Don't go there.
Don't go to Shoreham.
Shoreham on the Shoreham. Sea. She said, if you do, your dad will go mad. And I said, well, why?
That's where they did the training, wasn't it?
Yes.
Where mobs did their training at Shoreham.
He spent a lot of time at Shoreham.
Yeah.
After one of his hospital.
Right. But they did their basic training there as well, I'm sure, didn't they? Because there's that famous photo of mobs, which he must be in, the group photo.
We had to avoid Shoreham, which we managed to do.
So it was there, wasn't it? That trauma that you said that he showed no signs of it. Probably to you he didn't, but he must have discussed it with your mum, and he must have had some trauma that he hid. He didn't want to bother you about, did he, as his young girl?
That was all right. So we kept away from Shoreham.
Huh.
We kept away from Brighton and the sea.
Yeah.
We merely went to East Grinstead.
East Grinstead, there's not much sea there, is there, at East Grinstead?
No.
If you went there now, you can see Gatwick Airport. Oh wow, they're very special memories, aren't they? What's the most outstanding memory that you've got? I know he's been gone 50 years now, but your memories are still very good, aren't they?
Well, I don't know. Apart from the landmine, I'll always remember that.
Yeah, and worrying about where your dad was when that went off, and bringing sweets back from the cobblers if they won.
But
Remembrance Sunday, you've talked about, that was obviously very special. Did you go with him on Remembrance Sunday?
No.
Or did he go on his own with his mates?
Yes.
He wanted to do that with his mates, did he?
Yes, whoever was on road to, because they used to go about every other night.
Right.
So it was, and then working next day.
So when there were fire watching. So he'd be working on the farm. He went back to being a farmer.
No, he was working then with the county council.
With the council doing that heavy work, we saw on the report. So
he
was doing that all day.
Left the farm work then.
Coming home, having his dinner, and then getting
going
the bus down
to
Toaster, doing the fire watching.
So, of course, to make up for lost time, Saturdays and Sundays were on the allotment.
Not in the pub? He didn't go in the
pub? No.
No.
Only if mother's father came.
Right, and they went out
and then he'd take him in the pub.
It's literally the other side of the... We're sitting in this lovely lounge. Ah,
but we might have a pipeline, mightn't we?
Yes, that's right. There might be a secret pipe coming through the wall. Oh, that's incredible. It really is. That's been really interesting. I'm really grateful. I know so many people are going to be interested in this.
All through the war, really, we were so lucky.
In the Second World War. The
Second World War. Living in rural England.
Yeah.
You could get the old rabbit to help out.
Which you means, and you've got milk, eggs, other produce.
A local farmer made butter.
Yeah.
Which we should never have had, but we did.
Yeah.
And we got all the vegetables on the allotments.
Yeah, of course, yeah, that your dad had produced.
In fact, I know that my father used to bike down to the allotment and come away with all his vegetables and give half of them as he came up the high street.
To people in the village?
Yeah. A person in Perry had his veg.
That's the way village life was, wasn't it? Up and down the country.
That he used to say, well, I've been spared long enough to do it.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
He's been spared the Great War.
I like to share it.
I think that's a good way to end. Mm. I think that it's very emotional for you, and I think that really justifies that generation.
Yes.
That they've come back, they feel very grateful, and we are very grateful to them, aren't they? Aren't we, for what they created for us. And I'm sure that they're looking down on us now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm. I think it's time for a cup of tea, isn't it?
Right.
You think it is?
Kettle on, Molly.
Thank you.
Can I do it, Molly?
So I hope you enjoyed that interview with the lovely Molly. She really was a joy to be with, and it was so fascinating to find out what her dad was like and how he reacted to his experience during the Great War. And his story, the reason why I wanted to do it, of course, would have been typical of so many of those volunteers and guys that were conscripted during World War One. And I hope as you listen to that, those ancestors that you didn't know that served on the Western Front and beyond would probably come home and told the same stories to their family that Charlie had told to Molly. So thank you very much for, again, tuning in to this podcast with me, Terry Wenham, Tales from the Battlefields. This weekend, I've been volunteering once again with the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. This week, I'm recording this on Sunday afternoon, and this week is the Commonwealth War Graves Commission War Graves Week, where no doubt lots of you will have been out visiting your local cemeteries and churchyards and finding out about those soldiers that came back and died of their wounds or of illness here in the United Kingdom. And I'll be providing a full report on that in the next podcast. Tomorrow, it's Monday, and I'll be off early tomorrow morning with Ledger Battlefield tours, and I'll be guiding a coachload of people to the Normandy battlefields. So I'll also give an update on what happened on that on the next podcast. The next podcast may be a couple of weeks away, because after I get back from Normandy, I've got a couple of days off, and then it's out to Lewes on a private family tour, where I'll be taking somebody across Hill 70 at Lewes, where his grandfather was wounded but survived in the same battle that Charlie was involved in at Lewes in September 1915. So there's a lot going on over the next few weeks. But as I say, thank you very much for listening. And as usual, I'd like to pay tribute to Charlie and his mates from the village of Paulersbury, as they're remembered on the war memorial in the village, and to all those others in Mob's Own that didn't come back from the Great War between 1914 and 1918.